The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And welcome aboard to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, and it is episode number 65. We're in the kind of the doldrums in the middle of the summertime, and it is hot as can be here in South Florida, I'll tell you. But nonetheless, it is a great time to be studying the ins and the outs and taking some time to understand the psychology of investing. So what I did was I went out and got the best. That's right. Brett Steenbarger is with us today. He's going to be talking about the psychology of money, how we really push our emotions into the process, and sometimes that doesn't really work out so well. You know, that whole, remember back for the podcast we did with Tim Knight, that whole the slope of hope, you know, that we hope it's going to get better, and I hope that, oh man, and I know we all do it, and get that, what I call the redhead syndrome, where you're kind of banging your head all day against the desk, where you just can't believe what you did when you said, I'm not going to do this. And, you know, how many times have you said, and we're all the same, you know, how many times have you said, oh, if it ever gets back up to this point, I'm going to sell, and then you didn't pull the trigger, right? Why is that? What's the emotion behind that? What's the psychology behind that? Well, hopefully we're going to get that answer today. I also want to talk to you about a couple other things I mentioned earlier that you may be interested in, and that is that I'm going to be at the Money Show in San Francisco in August. It starts on, I believe it's August 8th. I'll be in on a panel with the rest of the MSN Money Strategy Lab starting at about 8:45 in the morning, and then I have my own class. Woohoo! It's going to be called Portfolio Mastery. I'm going to kind of go through all of the different dynamics, what we call the techna, funda, quanta, techna, funda. We're going to go through all of that, and we're going to have a good chance to really understand a lot about the markets and really what it takes these days to invest successfully. And I hope that you will try to join me. If you have any questions about that at all, you can go over to our site. I think there's a link somewhere there. And there's also over at The Money Show, you could find all the information, the forms to sign up. There is an amazing array of people that are going to be speaking there. So I think that's going to be fun. I think you'll enjoy it out in San Francisco. The other thing I want to mention to you is, I'm a real big fan of technical analysis. I think that if you really got to understand how a chart works and understand the dynamics behind it, maybe not every piece of nitty-gritty about MACD crossovers and Bollinger Bands, stochastics, and you know the whole litany of different bands and indicators and all the different things. But if you can utilize a chart correctly and you can understand the dynamics of a chart, the simple process of when to buy and when to sell, and utilizing it for really price points, which I teach in the book. By the way, plug, if you haven't gotten the book yet, The Disciplined Investor, go over and get a copy over at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever you shop for your books. It's available on audiobook and Kindle. If you haven't checked out the Kindle, it's really cool. But anyway, if this is actually a plug for somebody else's book that I want to do here. My friend Brian Shannon over at Alpha Trends, wow, he has put together just an amazing book. What is really cool about it is, you take all the charts and all that, and it's so hard to sometimes understand what somebody's teaching you when they just write it. But this has got pictures. I mean, we all like pictures, right? So this has got pictures, and it talks about the different dynamics of what a chart and where you want to buy and sell. And he talks you through the process and makes it very easy to understand. And Brian's just the king of charting. You know, if you look at his website, he's got, every day he has another chart that he does on a video style. You just kind of plug in and check it out. And what's really nice about this book is it's really big, but it's a little expensive too, to be honest with you, but well worth it. And if you're saying to yourself, well, you know, $50, $60 for a book or $40 for a book, it's too expensive. You know, just think about that for 1 second. Think about the fact of how much will you lose on a trade or make on a trade, depending on what side you are on, if you don't have the tools that you need, or can this help you? Can this help you to make one better trade? And I bet you make a lot more than $50 by using some of these techniques. I've got to tell you right now. I don't know. Maybe it's even more than that. I think it's like $60 or so. But what I want you to do is check it out. It is really, if you've ever wanted to know about technical analysis, charting, and the whole process, and the buy-sell signals and all, this is a book you really should pick up. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I think that it's a great tool to have and to use to make you more successful. And as you know, the Disciplined Investors, all you out there that have become the Legion of Disciplined Investors, I get your emails all the time. And you know, talking about how you did this, you did that, and kind of going through the process. Technical analysis is the third component of what we call this quanta funda techna, right? This whole three-part, three-headed beast that we utilize when we find quantitative investing to find the stock. We use the fundamentals to really understand about the company and the technical analysis to understand when the buy and sell points. That's the key to all this. And last but not least, I'll mention that a lot of this you're going to see implemented on the Strategy Lab starting August 1st. So it's starting any day now, or actually maybe not August 1st. I think it's August 5th. But nonetheless, over at MSN Money Strategy Lab, I'll put links on the website. And I think that it would be really cool for you to take a look at some of the things we're going to use. And I'm going to use the tools from the MSN Money site to actually implement that. And when we get back, we're going to dial in and plug into the psychology of money with Trader Feed's Brett Steenbarger, and author, great guy, and I'm looking forward to it. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This is Brian Shackman from CNBC, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
All right, we are back, and I am very excited because I am with someone and talking with someone who I respect very much. He has a great blog. It's called Trader Feed, and I'll give you those exact places to look when we have a moment, but he is, I guess the best way to describe it, the market psychologist, and he deals with behavioral finance, and we'll get to this discussion because Brett Steenbarger is here, and Brett, let's talk about the markets and the psychology behind it. What do you say?
Well, you know, we've got many different markets doing different things right now, and that's what makes the current period so interesting because we've got this bull market in commodities and in some commodity-related equity issues, and then we've got real bear markets going on in the housing sector and in the financial stocks. So there's a real mixed bag of sentiment out there. Some markets seem to be in bubble mode, and some markets seem to be in crash mode. And what the overall averages are doing is somewhere in between, which is misleading. On top of all that, we've got the housing market, which has people worried and is in a protracted decline, and that accompanies a unique sentiment.
Yeah, and here's what I'd like to kind of start with. You know, I think I had a gentleman named Tim Knight on, and he has a blog called The Slope of Hope, and I asked him, what exactly, explain the slope of hope. And he explains to me that, you know, obviously when things are going down, we start getting this whole, oh my gosh, I hope things will come back. I hope one day it will come back. I hope it's going to come back. Uh-oh, here it goes. And this whole kind of repetitive process of really going from, and maybe the individuals rather than some traders, or maybe not, but, you know, kind of fear creeps into the discussion. And when they say that there's no atheists in a foxhole, right? And, you know, the fact is that you get down to that point and you start kind of doing a little bit of prayer, a little bit of hope. I swear to God, if it ever gets to 100 again, I'll sell. And I had a discussion with somebody the other day. He says, you know what? I swore that if my portfolio got back to break even, you know, after this last down back in March and up to through this year, that I would sell it all and just put it in cash. He says, you know what? I didn't do it. And why is that? What happens there?
Well, you know, people do get attached to their ideas. They get attached to their portfolios and certainly get attached to their assets. And so it becomes hard to make those objective, difficult decisions to divest yourself. You know, with the housing situation, we have a particular attachment because so much of people's equity, so much of their potential retirement money, the money that they would use for the future, is tied up in their homes. And so to see that as a declining asset when that has not been the case for decades, is particularly threatening. I mean, we're coming to a perfect storm for the baby boomers, right? We've got declining housing values, we've got a weak stock market, and we've got relatively low yields. And so all the ways that you would normally think about growing your assets for retirement and preserving your assets for retirement are under threat right now. And you're going to get some pretty emotional reactions as a result.
Have you spent any time studying Harry Dent's work about his demographic economics and looking at the convergence of the indicators, for example, the baby boomers, as you talk about, and the declining birth rate, along with the fact that we have a various 10-year and 20-year and presidential cycles all converging? Have you looked into any of that?
Well, I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with his name. I'm not familiar with his specific work. I certainly am familiar with some of the demographics and the demographic arguments about what's going on now, and those certainly are sobering.
Yeah. So just for a moment to get back to real estate, which again is just an example. Do you think that real estate does any difference when someone has and would potentially have an emotional attachment to the real estate, and that's why the potential for an elongated decline where people would say, you know what, my house was worth 500. I remember when it was worth 500. I'm not selling below 500. Then it goes to 450 on, in terms of comparatively. And they say, you know what, it's 450, but my house is still worth 500, I believe, because there's no real market value aside from, there's not a daily minute by minute market value chart that we could look at the value of someone's home. And that will further negatively affect the pricing, because it is my belief, and as we saw last week with the Case-Shiller numbers, which arguably have been, they're at their lowest, but and some people say there's a little bit of a hiccup in it. But nonetheless, is it possible that people have been waiting for a long time, believing that it's going to come back, holding on because they have much more of a personal attachment to it, and when it does start to fall, there'll be a panic sell and people saying, you know what, finally, I've just got to get out at this point. I can't wait any longer?
Well, that's already happening in some of the overheated markets, and I have friends, personal associates who have picked up properties at real panic prices, and so I agree with you. I think that happens in the stock market. I think it happens in real estate. As you point out, it's probably a more elongated process with real estate simply because of the liquidity and the frequency with which people make decisions. But I don't even look at the individual homeowner. I agree with you. I think the individual homeowner is prone to keep their house off the market even if they're thinking of selling because they're hoping it will come back, and that creates an implicit inventory on top of the inventory that's already out there.
Right.
But as I travel from city to city, I've been around Florida, I've been on the West Coast, I've been quite a bit through the Northeast. Everywhere I go, there are cranes on the skyline. There's building going on. And it's not just commercial, it's residential real estate. You go down to Miami, they're building.
Yeah, coming live to you from Miami right now. So, I understand completely.
Yeah. I was down in Brickell, just recently. Great area. I love it. But they're building. So, you've got not only people holding properties off the market because they're hoping it will come back, you've got more inventory coming onto market. A portfolio manager said to me during one of our conversations, I'll start buying real estate when there are no cranes on the skyline. And I agree with that. I think that's probably the best technical indicator.
Hmm. Well, the question I think really is when the cranes are not operating. There may be cranes, but many of them, how many of them really are operational? I think that's a big issue, but that we could split hairs on that. So give me Brett Steenberger, and again, you really need to, if you're serious about trading and not just kind of shooting from the hip and understanding the various psychology and understanding the behavioral finance behind the markets, because I do believe if you are a trader especially, there's a significant amount or an overwhelming amount of psychology that goes into the daily market gyrations. You should check out traderfeed.blogspot.com. Again, we'll put that link on the site. But give me a mini lesson. Here we are. Let's forget about day trading for a minute. Let's say I'm a swing trader. Let's say that I'm going to trade a particular index, an ETF. And let's just say it's the S&P 500 index or the NASDAQ index. Doesn't really matter, but a core index. And I'm going to believe that through some kind of process of technical analysis, if it, let's say, crosses, you know, it's MACD trigger and on volume, blah, blah, I'm going to do a buy, and somehow I'm going to do a sell on the reverse. And I've been doing this for some time, and it seems to work okay. And all of a sudden, it starts getting, you know, I start saying, you know what, that's just not seemingly working. I'm going to kind of do a little bit more. I believe it's really going to play out here because I think it's going to go up or down. I mean, tell me how you'd counsel me on some of these kind of, you know, when I start changing my philosophy and I start maybe putting in some additional emotional overlays and what that does.
Yeah, it's a complicated question because, and you're getting at the heart of why I don't do any coaching of individual retail traders or investors, because I think the majority of them are doing exactly what you described. Mm. They are looking at the kinds of indicators that you would find on a charting program, looking at moving average crosses, looking at oscillator patterns. And when you test those out, it turns out there's no edge whatsoever. There are no favorable expectations. I work with portfolio managers in hedge funds. I work with traders at prop desks at investment banks. I work with proprietary traders here in Chicago, my home area. And of them, none, zero, use those kind of methods. So these are career professionals making money consistently, managing millions of dollars, and they use none of the methods that are commonly described in the trading literature.
So, I mean, I'm sure...
And so, you know, from my vantage point, it's not an issue of psychology and helping their psychology for those folks.
Right.
They're trading a set of patterns, they're trading a set of techniques that do not work, that cannot work, and I can maybe help them feel more comfortable with their failures, but
that's good.
I can't change the fact that they lack the essential skills and knowledge to perform well in the market.
So let me ask you a question now. You say that the professional traders don't use those, but the fact is right. That obviously they look at those, obviously, because they know everybody else is watching those on the other side. They have to be looking at that.
No one. That's a common. Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting there watching them as they trade. I know them personally. Yeah, that's a common myth that you see in the trading literature that everyone looks at because everyone else is like, no one else is looking at it. No portfolio. I mean, sure, they'll look at a chart. I mean, they will use that for reference. But the idea that they are looking at this particular oscillator or this particular cross of moving averages or because other people are watching it, that is totally not the case. The only thing that they might be looking at, again, as reference, would be just very general support resistance kinds of points. You know, yeah, sure, people will look at that as a reference point, but to think that they're trading off it, that is so far from reality.
Hmm. But what about...
But people get threatened and upset when I say that.
Yeah, I am. I'm threatened and upset right now.
In the retail trading community, they get really upset because, you know, when all you have is a hammer, you know, what can you do? You treat everything like a nail. So that's the hammer they have, and they want to be able to use it. And so I just don't get involved in that kind of thing. People say trading is, you know, 80% or 90% psychology. Totally not true. Trading is all about knowledge and skills that you develop over time, just like any performance field. And if you don't have the knowledge, if you don't have the tools, if you don't have the skills, you cannot succeed.
So here's a good, I think, a segue. I want to get back to that for 1 second because I want to, and remind me if I don't remember, but what are the tools that maybe a professional would use? But we'll get to that. I'm sure that's a very big topic, but just generally. But here's a question I have for you. I did something, and I'm going to actually, I have to bring this to the show one of these days. But what I did was I saw one of these advertisements for like this great buying stock system, you know, one of these things where you buy some software or at least hear the pitch and they tell you how great their system is to buy and sell and anybody could do it. And I, and you know what I did? It was kind of creepy, but I went to the seminar. I had to hear what they were saying. I had to hear how.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
sure.
I was kind of so troubled and disturbed by it. I had to go. So I sat there and I listened. And first it started out with a great rah-rah session. And mind you, I must tell you that the gentleman who was running it was brilliant. I mean, in terms of his ability to get the audience really charged, you know?
And they know who you're talking about, but go ahead.
Yeah, and what he did was, he first of all, this technique where he would say a sentence and say, what do we all want? We want, and whatever the, you know, he would lead you to the answer. So let's say we all want profit. And he would let the audience say the answer. You know, therefore, almost every sentence he would do this with, and almost creating a buy-in by proxy, you know, by having them. It was fascinating.
Sales technique, absolutely.
It was great. Mm-hmm. So then he starts talking about, you know, hey, you know, you've been working for the man for all these years, and you can quit your job and create all this money, blah, 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 and gets into the discussion about how easy it is and utilizes a good amount of quotes by big names, Peter Lynch and Warren Buffett, but to be honest with you, twisted them, in my opinion, and only kind of clipped the areas that they wanted to. And in the end, it was all about, you know, just for $495. I mean, what's $495? You can buy the system that will tell you, you know, a buy and a sell signal, spend 30 minutes a day at best. I mean, don't you have 30 minutes a day to give to your stock? And then you could basically quit your day job. And I was getting, honestly, physically nauseous because I was so disturbed. I really was. I was so disturbed that the people in this room, which were a cross-section of anybody, probably didn't have the money to lose and probably didn't have the money to spend on the $495 product. And, you know, would buy into this, but by the way, would probably only require more money over time. And there was a break where it kind of was getting to the point where they were going to obviously, you know, put you in a headlock and make you buy the product. And I stood up and left, and they said to me, you know, I had a big tag, Andrew, what do you think? And I said, you know, I'll be honest with you. I really think you're going to hurt people, and I'm just really disturbed that you're doing this. Now, all that said, it is going on continually between infomercials and advertising, and I write a piece of this. You read my book, and I write a piece about this in my book, and I change the name to Protect the Innocent and tell a real story about how a gentleman who was in my office, actually a friend of mine, was renting space, and he was utilizing this colorful technique of buying and selling, and after 6 months, he went live, and he lost $60,000 his first month, not understanding why that was. And so now, all that being said, why are people doing this? Those are the tools that we just talked about not being used by the big boys that they use in those kind of to back up those kind of programs, MACD crossovers, you know, support and resistant, simple support resistant or breaking moving averages. Why is it, probably just a stupid question, but why is it people are buying into this kind of stuff?
They're selling hope. You know, they're selling dreams, fantasies. They're desperate people. Yeah, there are people who want to get rich quick, and there are people who desperately need money, and that's who's appealing to. And that's why the promises of the 30 minutes a day and you can quit your day job. And when you think of the human cost of what is lost when people do quit their day jobs and lose their money pursuing these fantasies, you can't help but be nauseous.
Yeah,
I've had opportunities to do to put together products and seminars of a similar nature, and I've been offered various financial inducements to do that, and would never be able to bring myself to do that. It's definitely one of the seamier underbellies of the financial marketplace, but it's all about hope and desperation and people's needs. Many times people are trading not because they have found objective opportunity, but because they're desperate and they need money and they need success. They need to fulfill these fantasies.
So as an investor, if you could tell me, again, mini session here, just you don't know me and all my patterns and all that, so it's not a easy answer, but if you were to tell me kind of one of the things that I can do to really better myself as an investor trader or whatever, I mean, what is like rule number one by Brett Steenbarger?
Rule number one would be observe and study the markets that you're operating in so that you have some awareness, some sensitivity to the patterns within those, and spend a lot of time learning the markets before you put your capital at risk. And so just like in any performance field, there's going to be a long developmental period of learning and building skills before you actually get out there and perform at a high level. And so to be willing to go through that learning curve, to not fool yourself into thinking that you can just buy when the chart is green and sell when it's red and 30 minutes a day make a fortune. So that would be the first rule. The second rule is once you are trading or investing and you're experiencing some successes and you're experiencing some losses, to study your winning trades as intensively as you study your losers. Learn your own patterns. Just like markets have patterns, we have patterns. What are you doing right when you make money? Where are your skills? What are your best ideas? Where do they come from? Learn about what you do well so that you can do more of it. And learn where your mistakes are so that you can work around those weaknesses. That would probably be rule number two.
Mm-hmm. I think that overconfidence, by the way, and just for a moment, I think that overconfidence is a big killer of returns. You know, people believe that they start getting, and maybe not overtly, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm so great with it. I mean, just I think that the psychology of getting lazy and being overconfident when things are going your direction is probably one of the biggest the detractors of return over time. Would you think that that's, well, maybe not the biggest, but that's...
Yes. Yes, the overconfidence takes a number of different forms. You know, the average trader that I hear about and experience in the individual trading world, not in hedge funds, the average individual trader is undercapitalized relative to the returns that they hope to get. And so that's their over-optimism. They are hoping that with a small portfolio, certainly less than six figures, is very small. Mm-hmm. If they have a small portfolio, they're hoping that they can, quote-unquote, trade for a living. They hope that they could double their money, they could make 50% of their money with some regularity. And the best portfolio managers, the best traders, are not doing that with any regularity.
Right.
You know, if they make 20% on a year and do that in a risk-adjusted way, that's quite good, and they'll attract plenty of capital. So people have over-optimistic expectations, which leads them to be overly aggressive in their trading and investing, and that leads to outsized losses over time.
That's interesting. I think that also we can probably bear that out with the recent Shanghai market, which became a day trader's just playground for many of the people there, and look what happened recently. But let's just finish up on, so tell me, what are some of the generic general tools that are used by professionals compared to what the what's out there from a technical analysis side of things that are used by non-professionals?
It really depends on the trader or the portfolio manager, which markets they're operating in and which strategies that they are trading. So a global macro trader is going to use very different tools than an event-based trader or someone who is trading relative value, let's say in the fixed income markets. So the tools really are specific to the job, just like in any craft. And I wouldn't say that there's one set of tools the way that sometimes you hear in the popular literature that this one oscillator could be used in any market. I mean, you don't see that in the professional trading world. It's much more tailored. Certainly, the professional traders have tremendous access to information flows and research that the average individual trader does not have.
Let me translate that. Can I translate that for a second just to make sure we're clear on that? What that means is not that anybody's getting, obviously, let's just say, information that is not under regulation FD, but we're really talking about the fact that because of their access to other people in other areas, whether they're even having dinner with a particular person on Wall Street that may have an insight to something, just naturally, as one point, it naturally gives them better access to this information. Whereas maybe I am sitting here in Florida and looking at a particular security, really not... seeing some of the movement and the potential deals that may be happening with the stock or with the company. Obviously, that does a little more depth to that, but the point is that on its very nature, you know, people are having much more conversations potentially with people in the know than maybe with professionals, and then maybe with non-professionals.
Yes, particularly if they're executing through investment banks and they have relationships with multiple prime brokers.
Right.
You have a tremendous information flow. All the research from all the investment banks is at your fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
A tremendous advantage because you get a sense for what the street is thinking, and you get a sense for the better research and the worse research, and you can develop ideas around that. And that's, you know, common to the larger financial institutions, but not available to the average individual investor.
Right.
So, you know, that certainly is one set of tools. The other would be quantitative research, where you're looking at patterns in markets that you can study quantitatively, statistically, so that you know when the market has done X, Y, and Z in the past, this has been the pattern of future returns. And while those aren't guaranteed, you have some ways of seeing if there's an edge relative to the variability of those results, mm-hmm. and can factor that into your trading.
Right,
and just having
factors.
Access to those kind of models mm-hmm. is a tremendous advantage over someone who is just visually looking at a chart right. or
With free tools. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, yes, in my book, I talk about all the possibilities using quantitative and technical and really to give yourself the best edge you can. But the fact of the matter is that many of the tools out there are built, not with the professional in mind, obviously. But more so, I guess, and we'll just finish up on this because we want to end this, but I don't want to end this, but we have a certain amount of time that we can talk, is that when I look at much of the literature, as you mentioned, you know, obviously I think one of the things that we have to realize is that, or it seems that we have to realize is that, I think individuals or maybe even professionals, people looking at this, we want to know that there's some kind of a system attached to what they're doing, whoever that professional is. We want to know that there's some kind of way that they can, you know, they're doing it more than just their internal philosophies and process. It just, I think, makes us all feel better when it comes to investing with someone else, that they at least have something that is systematized. Would you tend to agree with that?
Yes, and some professional money managers are systematized, some are mechanically systematized, and others are much more discretionary and based on their experience and judgment. It's, mm-hmm. There's a real wide variety of trading methodologies out there in the professional trading world as well as in the individual trading
right.
world.
Well, Brett Steenbarger, the website is traderfeed.blogspot.com, and he also has several books out. You have a new book coming out, too. When is that coming out?
Yeah, that's coming out early in 2009. Mm. It's called The Daily Trading Coach, and basically I'm teaching people how to use psychological methods for themselves to coach themselves to better performance in trading.
Mm. Also, you wrote The Psychology of Trading and, more recently, Enhancing Trader Performance, which are just great reads, and I encourage you to pick those up. Thank you so much for being there. And
thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Andrew.
Thanks for finally catching up. I mean, we've been trying to get together for a while, so I appreciate it.
Exactly.
Have a good one. And next time in Florida, maybe you and I can climb to the top of a crane and have a beer together.
That sounds good. It sounds like it may be a stationary crane.
I understand. Exactly. All right, I'll see you soon. Okay. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Good deal. Bye-bye.
Oh, the life and times of a behavioral finance expert. I mean, it must be pretty amazing to watch how people react, crying and getting happy and all the things in between in terms of their overall, emotional upheaval when it comes to not only trading, but, really just long-term, not only trading, investing, of course. But listen, you have to remember something, that when it comes to investing, one of the key components here is that if you understand the behavioral finance, you'll probably do a lot better off. You could take a look at a chart, for example, and look where the various lines are, in terms of the support and the resistance and the kind of the moving average and pinpoint. Again, Brett said that these aren't really used, but there is support resistance lines that are used oftentimes. And if you can find out where people are going to hurt the most, and then, invest and figure that out. For example, if the 35 is where you see the volume is really spiked on the short interest, and you realize that it's approaching that number and it's starting to peak over it, there's going to be some pain for some people on the breakout. And therefore, you may want to think about investing and looking at it from that angle. Where are people feeling the pain? Where are people, really going to be upset about something? And that will probably bring you to the best areas for buying and selling. Anyway, what we're going to do is next week when we get back, we're going to have a little treat for you. I've been eyeing a little stock. And I tell you, it's in the technology area, but it looks really appetizing. I'm going to bring that to you next week on the next week's podcast on The Disciplined Investor. So hopefully you'll stick around. You'll be back next week. And in the meantime, stay cool. It's kind of warm out there. And when we get back next week on The Disciplined Investor, I'm going to bring you a little treat. So that about ends it for this week. We'll see you real soon on The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.